Thank you, Sophia, and thank you all for having me, and appreciate your engagement. Looks like things are there's plenty of spirit here in Harris County for such a nice turnout, and Michael and the others who are running in their your runoffs. Best wishes for you, and go get them, and hopefully we'll be able to declare you the victors very soon. In 1820, the spring. One of our founding fathers, who's now in his statesmanship years, 6 years before he will pass, of course he doesn't know that at the time, he'll pass on the 50th anniversary of the 4th of July, and one of the great providential moments or coincidences of American history, the same time his friend, nemesis, and then friend again in late life, John Adams, would pass on the same day. But this is 6 years before that. Mr. Jefferson, at Monticello, picks up his quill pen and writes a note off to his protege. Protege happens to be a guy by the name of Monroe, who's the current president. And so he writes this letter to President Monroe, and he says that in the body of that, if it can be acquired, the province of Texas, talking about Texas, the province of Texas will be the richest state in the Union, comma, without exception. Now, this is, remember, 1820. This is before Stephen F. Austin brings his families in. This is before the Mexican Revolution, even. This is before, of course, San Jacinto in 1836 and statehood in 1845. That's quite a vision. And in a sense, we're still living out the Jefferson vision, because as we know today, when 1,400 people are pouring in, and a state of almost 27 million people, we are now producing more goods and services than even, and exporting more goods and services than even the state of California, which is now approximately 37, 38 million people. So in many ways, we are living out the vision of Mr. Jefferson. And a few years ago, we passed the Empire State to become the second largest population state and the second largest economy. And what is it if we were a separate country? I think our economy would be something like the 14th largest economy in the world, second only to that of California. So we're gaining quickly on California, as many Californians flee their state to come here to find a better way of life. And why is that important? For me, in many ways, fulfilling that vision for Texas is why the Office of Attorney General is so important. Because remember, Mr. Jefferson was the first president who was the anti-federalist, and he cared a lot about individual liberties and the rights of states, and that states had created this national government. And that's where we find ourselves today with this great tension. We've got a... every day when you pick up the newspaper, whether it's the IRS or the NSA or the DOJ, we see an aggressive, ever-increasing, overreaching federal government, a national government that seems to have forgotten that states created it, and that there are certain limits to federal power, and there's certain responsibilities and powers reserved to our states and to individuals in the Bill of Rights. And that position in our state that will now be open for the first time in nearly 12 years come next year. Greg Abbott, who's served the longest of any attorney general, Texans will have an opportunity to pick a new top lawyer. And so this is critically important, because this position is the one that can stand up to our national government and say, you're overreaching, and your systems don't work, and let us make our decisions about elections. You don't need, Mr. Holder, you don't need to quickly try to play Congress and come up with a new way to put preclearance back on the state of Texas. Why don't you wait for the Congress to act? I mean, the Supreme Court just wrote in June. And so this position is critically important, that we have someone that's, of course, a lawyer, and someone who's tough and competent will fill the shoes of Greg Abbott. And we'll stand up to the federal government. I mean, for me, it's not unpatriotic, Sophia, to point out to your federal government that they have a limit, and they do have a role. Not only should they not encroach on our rights, but they should fulfill the right that they've been granted in the Constitution, which is, our state has a long international border, as we all know. Well, that's a national responsibility to protect the international border. Why don't we start there? As a legislator, I've spent a lot of time funding local law enforcement to help secure a national responsibility. Another role for the national government, of course, is the we have a treaty with the country of Mexico for water. How are we doing on our getting our fair share of the bargain for our farmers, for the rice farmers here in along the Gulf, other farmers along the Gulf, to make sure that we get our negotiated treaty? That's the role of the federal government, to make sure they enforce international treaties. So standing up to the federal government is a really important role for this position, and that's why I'm running for Attorney General. I'm also running because this position has a critical role in continuing our heritage here of transparent government in Texas. If we're not open and transparent, you all can't hold the public servants accountable. It's sort of part of the formula of our democracy. So openness is critically important. And the Attorney General has a key role in that. The Attorney General's office and their Open Records Division makes a lot of the key decisions on whether or not a public information request is going to be granted. And it makes a lot of the key decisions on whether or not some business is going to try and find something out about some other business using that, abusing that. And my view is that we ought to be open for things that go on in the public square, and we ought to be open about the governmental process and the checkbook and the details of the budget and the details of pension plans. All this stuff ought to be as open as possible so that citizens can engage, hold us accountable. And the AG makes a lot of those key decisions, so we better have someone who errs on the side of transparency. Finally, I would say that this position has a really important responsibility in preserving our limited government here in Texas. Well, and you say, well, everyone can say that. But this is at the heart of the matter. Ultimately, the rule of law is really important. Anyone here who's tried to be involved in commerce and in countries where you can't rely on the title of your investment, or where you can't rely on the rule of law or the benefit of your bargain under a contract, investment doesn't move into those places. It ultimately comes to places where it can be secure, and there's less bureaucracy, less red tape to move an idea or a transaction or a development along quicker. And so that's why, one of the reasons why people are pouring into Texas is not just our low taxes, but it's also the perception that there's real opportunity here, that there's fairly light, sensible regulations. Like in a football game where one game the players get to play a lot, and another where the referees are constantly throwing flags. We generally like to let them play. And in Texas, we set a clear set of rules, keep it pretty sensible, pretty light, and then we like to let people live and let businesses go about their enterprises, moving their enterprises along in commerce. And so ultimately, when the Attorney General, who gets those really tough issues that for his AG opinions, Greg was telling me recently that he spends a lot of time on Sunday afternoons well into the evening making the final edits and then agreeing, signing off on the AG opinions. That responsibility, very important to ultimately deciding whether someone's going to err on the side of less government or more government, less regulation or more regulation, more bureaucracy, or clarity, simplify, make it easy for people to understand, as opposed to sort of obfuscate it, whether we're being just or we're just going to be political. That position ultimately is really important, and those are the reasons I'm running. I want to stand up to our federal government. I want to remind it of its role and use litigation where we need to. Greg's been pretty effective. I think 30-some lawsuits, and I think the environment we're moving into is actually going to be worse. I mean, I think once we get past the midterms, I think there's not going to be any political break on this administration, and their only stop is going to be their own legacy, which is a leftist legacy. So I think the environment's going to get worse. We already know that the lawsuit on voter ID, which we had a good example. Remember, the other side said, "Oh, you're suppressing the vote." We found out more people voted when there was a voter ID system in place last week for our constitutional amendments in your city elections, municipal elections here in Houston. So we already know on the horizon we've got some litigation coming up for the person in this position. And so we best be prepared for I think an even tougher environment where the national government is going to try and encroach more and more on states like Texas. And so all the more reason to get it right. Just a little bit about me, or why I'm perhaps worthy of your consideration for someone who has that responsibility. I've been a lawyer all my life, all my adult life. I grew up in San Antonio. I'm the San Antonio boy who worked on a ranch near Seguin in summers and learned those values. Ultimately went to SMU Law School and went up to North Texas and convinced a young co-ed. See, after my third year of law school, I was feeling pretty good about things, and I lifted up my eyes from the law books and realized there were some co-eds on campus and convinced one ultimately to date and marry me. And you know what happens when you're a San Antonio boy and you marry a Dallas girl? I ended up living in Dallas. Never quite got back to the Alamo. And so 5 kids later, 30 years later, we've had a great family life. We're now empty nesters. I told her it would be really romantic. You know, that we have this extra time to run statewide.
And how does she feel about
she
that?
Didn't think that was interesting. But she's hanging in. The other night I was down here in Houston speaking, and she was up in Fort Worth in the same night. So it's her first time to speak alone, and she, I think she sort of got a, you know, kind of likes it. She told the aide, "I think the next time I can do it without notes." So we're gonna see. But we've had a really fortunate, but blessed as a family. All of our kids now, 3 are out of college, 2 in. And we have this opportunity. My law firm has seen the fit to allow me to pursue this. I have also, in addition to spending 3 decades as a lawyer in a large firm, a large Houston firm, I've lived in Houston briefly, worked for Baker & Botts. In the summers, worked for good firms like Fulbright & Jaworski, Andrews Kurth, some of the great Houston firms, did some of my initial training. And right after law school, I went to work for the Chief Justice of the Texas Supreme Court and really learned a lot about the appellate practice and litigation practice, and realized in perhaps the most important courtroom in the state how I could try and keep my clients out of the courtroom, which is how I've spent most of my practice as a lawyer. I've been fortunate to be rated at the highest levels for the last 2 decades by the group that rates lawyers for highest levels of ability and highest levels of ethics. And so I bring that to the table. Since this is a position for lawyers, I offer that. I know often people aren't all that excited about lawyers, too many lawyers, but this position is particularly important. You know, no one really likes lawyers until you really need a good one, kind of like a doctor.
Absolutely.
And this is not the time to
we feel your pain.
You know that one about what's dark brown and looks good on a lawyer? Two Dobermans.
That one I haven't heard yet.
So this is an important position, and we better have someone who's not getting on the job training, or someone. Look, it's outstanding to be a businessman. It's outstanding to be an investment banker. It's outstanding to be an entrepreneur, but and many lawyers aspire to those roles. But it's not what you're looking for in terms of qualifications for this particular position. Again, I'm the only one in the race who's actually practiced law at the highest levels for 3 decades. I also let you know that I've grew up as a Reagan conservative. I cut my teeth in 1984, working with George Strait. I ran the Victory Fund that brought the 6-pack of new congressmen into our party, 250,000 new registered voters. I know what it's like to get down in the trenches and register Republicans, something that we need to continue to be thinking about as we expand our base here in Texas. And so I grew up not only working for President Reagan and working for Senator Tower, but winning and learning how to win. And then more recently went to the legislature in 2003, so I've been there for a decade. From my neck of the woods in downtown and near North Dallas, was honored to represent my community in the legislature and come in with the first Republican majority. since Reconstruction in the House of Representatives. And I tried to get things done as a conservative. One of the examples I like to talk about is we not just be conservative, but actually get something done. You know, our ideas, we know our ideas work. History proves that conservative ideas work. And with strong advocates, really effective advocates, then the conservative solutions will prove up. And conservative ideas will win the debate. But we have to have effective advocates. And when I came in, I had been concerned as a young lawyer that the Supreme Court had ruled in the mid-80s that the state of Alabama couldn't even have a moment of silent prayer. And I was like, really? And and when I came in, say, leave it alone. We'll never get prayer back in the schools. I remember going in my campaign, some of my schools didn't even say the pledge. Now we have both the Texas pledge, U.S. pledge, as a result of my legislation, and a minute of silence. But it wasn't good enough just to get it passed, which we did, and we celebrate the 10th anniversary this year. But we knew it was going to be challenged, and that's what conservatives got to know. This the left is going to challenge us. We wrote it carefully. I worked with Greg Abbott, his office. I worked with a young solicitor named Cruz, who defended it successfully. Ted Cruz defended it as solicitor in Plano, in the district court, and then ultimately his successor, Jim Ho, who's endorsed our campaign, defended it at the Fifth Circuit. And today, 5 million school children say the pledge, say the Texas pledge, have a minute of silence. So conservatives, if they're competent and work hard, and you know this, it's just common sense. At some point, you're thoughtful about the language, you draft it carefully, you build the coalition, and you prepare for the litigation in the future. And that's whether it's been in open government issues and passing a constitutional amendment to make sure we had recorded votes, which we didn't have. When I came to the legislature, I stood up to Republicans and Democrats because you could pass a bill affecting millions of Texans without a record, on a voice vote. I said, that's crazy. You all have to hold us accountable. So today, after 2007, no one can pass a bill on final passage affecting millions of Texans without there being a record. You can hold us accountable. And just last week, my constitutional amendment, getting rid of a piece of government, everyone said, well, you can never shrink government. Conservatives always say, less government, limited government. But can you really do it? Well, last week, you all voted, 80-something percent in Texas voted to get rid of a piece of government we didn't need. It was Proposition 2. I'm the chair of higher ed, and we had a medical education board that wasn't serving any purpose. So we got rid of it. And so to me, when you all consider this race and you consider this position, you're going to hear a lot of talk. We're all going to talk conservative and say all the right things, but I hope you'll pay attention and look to see who's actually have a record of getting things done and moving the ball toward getting conservative solutions enacted. And there's been I'll end with this. There's been a group of lawyers that care deeply about this position, and they haven't had a change in a long time. And we've had a great attorney general in Greg Abbott. And so some of them that have worked for him care deeply about the office, his senior lieutenants, his two past first assistants, a former deputy solicitor to Senator Cruz, Sean Jordan, Jim Ho, as I've mentioned. All these senior Abbott lieutenants took a look at this race, interviewed all the candidates, and chose our campaign, which was a really nice compliment to our team. And then the same thing for a lot of Senator Cruz's senior advisors and legal advisors took a look. I invite you to go to danbranch.com, look on our website. You'll see whether it's four Supreme Court justices or whether it's a majority of my caucus in the House that didn't have to stick their neck out, that endorsed us, and it ranges from senior members to junior members to Tea Party Coalition or caucus chairpersons. We have a host of, and recently, last week, the DPS, so we've gotten the lawyers that are paying a lot of attention to the race, senior leading lawyers, and law enforcement groups now have taken a look at all the candidates and supported us. All that to say, please consider that when you look. What's really important is you all taking a hard look at this race, thinking about the qualifications, and you all making up your mind who would best serve us going forward. And on that basis, I do ask for your consideration, and I ask for your vote. I'm Dan Branch. You can go to our social media. I think we have a little card on the table, and check us out, start kicking the tires, see what you think that I might have to offer as your next Attorney General. Thank you.